Off the Ball, GAA.
I still make Limerick favourites to win the All-Ireland when it comes to the middle of July, but ultimately, from what we've seen so far, they're definitely teams that can challenge.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Welcome along to Who You Got, where we preview the weekend's action cross channel. Another four tantalising fixtures to preview this week, as we get it spectacularly wrong as we try to foresee the future, but we will try our best. Shane Hannan is here. Hello, Shane.
Hello there, Owen.
Colm Bouygues is here. Hello, Colm. Kathleen McNamee is here. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello, hello.
Let's get a look at the leaderboard. I think there has been a big mover after last week. Was it Shane? Was it you?
It was me, Owen, yes.
What happened last week? What did you do that was so good?
Well, I called City to beat Plymouth 3-1 exactly.
Okay.
I called United Fulham to finish 1-1 after the 90. Now, ultimately, I went for United 2-1 after extra time, but picked up some points there. I can't see the screen, but I know I did really well. 7 points, I think I got.
You got 7 points, yeah.
You're on 62 points overall, which brings you to 8 points behind the leader, Will. So you've moved into third position. Myself and Kathleen there stuck in fourth. Colm.
Yeah.
Colm at the bottom of the table.
Yeah, I know what it's like to lift the trophy.
So
I know what that's like.
You decided to let someone else have the chance.
I remember that, you know.
Did you feel sated? Is that what happened this year?
Extreme had a one-hit wonder called More Than Words, and I now get it, because I live in the extreme of both. And down there is just as exhilarating as up there, because you need to move. You know what I mean? Do you know what I mean by that? You need to move. You need to get up.
Motion is the
and
joy.
When you're first as well, you have a consideration, do I go for broke or do I play it safe in my predictions? And both places are good places to be.
Okay. Colm,
I wouldn't. I'm trying to say I wouldn't change this for the world.
No, I get that.
Complacency, I think, set in a little bit with Colm this season.
Yeah.
How you go from first to last?
I'm just
Colm,
like
is a question. For
I am
I have
racking
for you.
My brains about where Shane finished last year. I just
not top. No, not top.
I can't talk about
the present and the current.
I think it was forgettable, the finish. That's what the Irish Times described it as.
It's probably mid-table, but
when they reviewed our
stats, mid-table is better. I've never finished last. I'll tell you that much. Have you ever finished last, Kathleen?
No, I haven't.
No, you haven't.
I actually won it once as well. So.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. And we've been doing this more than 1 year.
We had a summer.
Well, I won the Euros.
Yeah. Of course. Well, let's get stuck into some of the
European
predictions.
Trophy better than a league trophy, I'll say.
Well, league trophy is a bit longer, isn't it? League over 38 games.
This weekend's fixtures, we're going to look at our Manchester United versus Arsenal, Nottingham Forest versus Manchester City, Chelsea versus Leicester City, and Arsenal versus Liverpool in the FA Cup. So let's have a look at the first game and our first list of predictions today, which is Manchester United against Arsenal, 4:30 Old Trafford on Sunday. Everybody's going for an Arsenal win except for Nathan, who's predicting a 1-1 draw, and Will, who's predicting a 1-1 draw. So it's going to be a draw because Will has predicted it, because he seems to be able to tell the future. All fairly small margins of victory, except for Jer, who's going 5-1 Arsenal. Shane, you're going 3-1 Arsenal.
Yeah. There's no universe in which I see Manchester United winning this game, partly because they're at home and their home form is horrendous, partly because, well, Europa League is the only thing that this team have left to play for this season, and more than one eye is going to have to be on the return leg against Sociedad next Thursday night. The injury list is chronic. The bench is like a leaving cert class. There's a lot of things going wrong for Ruben Amorim, and he's not necessarily to blame. He's going to get a bit of time with this team, but everything has to be put into next Thursday night against Real Sociedad. They're not going to chance much against Arsenal. They've nothing left to play for in the league. Relegation is not going to be a possibility because there are just, as it turns out, a few teams that are worse than them. And then there are things that are frustrating. Like, we were chatting about it on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning. Like, Dalot is the most frustrating footballer.
But what's going on here with himself and Hoyland?
Oh, cool. Dalot was brilliant last season for United. One of the team's best players. And then you see the other night, it's the most opportune moment for Dalot to cross the ball. First time, pass it across the box, and Hoyland will be there to finish it. Brilliant run from Hoyland, and Dalot just doesn't give it. Afterwards, Hoyland then, once the move breaks down, gives some back to Dalot. Is it to say, what are you doing? And Dalot has the cheek to talk back to him and kind of fight back. And I was like, Dalot, you were completely in the wrong there. So it's frustrating to watch him at the moment. And it just kind of was a moment that summarised where United are at the moment. I think, Hoyland hasn't scored in 19 games. that would have been the moment where he could break his duck and maybe get a bit of confidence back on board. So I like, when we're talking about this game this weekend, Arsenal mightn't have been going too well, but it's one of these occasions where I can see Arsenal coming away with a comfortable enough victory at Old Trafford.
A real array of top class number nines on display at Old Trafford on Sunday. Well, was there history to this beef between Hoyland and Dallow, or is this the first time it came up last night?
It's come up, not just with Hoyland, but it's come up with different players like Mazraoui and different players who haven't crossed it. And Garnacho is another one who just does not look up. And Hoyland has been given a lot of balls to Garnacho. He's been feeding him in terms of potential assists that Garnacho just hasn't finished. So I think Hoyland maybe has a little bit of beef with a number of players in that team, because the not scoring in 19 games isn't just on Rasmus Hoyland. It's on the lack of joy he's getting from the players around him. They just aren't, they aren't seeing the runs that he's making.
It's heartbreaking for Rasmus Hoyland too, because he came up with his own celebration when he was scoring goals there.
Remind us what that was.
Slit his throat.
Oh yeah.
Gladiator 2. And it was, he scored a couple of goals in a short period of time around the release of the film. And was like, here we go now, he has his own trademark. And I imagine the pressure intensifies because he's gone so long without scoring goals that it's like people are going to forget that I actually have a celebration. This is embarrassing. If you have a celebration, it's noted every time you score.
Yes.
So he does. You have to consider that too.
Wow. Yeah. It's like I hadn't considered the implications of that.
Yeah.
I'd glad the other two had kind of faded into the background in terms of our public consciousness.
And so as Hoyland as a goal scorer.
Like, that does seem to be the thing that's held up quite a bit around Rasmus Hoyland, is he's obviously not scoring loads of goals because he's not shooting, and he's not shooting because he's not getting the opportunities. Is that fair enough? Are we like leaving him off the hook? Is that the general feeling around Hoyland and United?
Well, you get the feeling that he is actually trying, is the thing. And you can see when the frustration comes in. I think if he wasn't trying, you wouldn't see that sort of frustration. You wouldn't see it boiling over with other players. And I think that does slightly let him off the hook, but I don't think it totally does. Because I think if you're Amorim and you're in that situation, why isn't he going to the players around Hoyland and being like, come on guys, look up, give him better service, give him something to work with. He's putting in all this effort, why aren't you? So I think it's probably a wider Manchester United problem than just Hoyland and what he is capable of doing.
Yeah, it certainly is. And like, I mean, the move of Xerxes to a slightly deeper position over the last few weeks into the number 10 seems to be working okay. I mean, he scored last night. A Manchester United player scores goal is probably movement, positive momentum. Is that what we're saying?
He's like, Xerxes technically a really good footballer.
Yeah.
You know, when he's on the ball, you actually watch him and he's really, really good. He probably wasn't signed for goals. You know, he was never going to be the 25-30 goal a season player. He didn't score many goals at Bologna. You know, when he was younger, maybe scored a few at Bayern Munich in the few years he was there. But he's not really a goal scorer. He holds up the ball well. He gets involved in link-up play. Still hasn't hit the heights that United fans want him to hit for the 30-odd million or 35 million that they signed him for. But like, there are just gaps in that United team. And like, even the body language from Garnacho last night, like, again, and you can read too much into this, but he's kind of shaking his head coming off. And you know, obviously there was during the week Amorim saying he's you know, he's going to have to pay for the team dinner after his walk down the tunnel recently as well, which Jim Ratcliffe will be delighted with, because you know, they'll save a few quid on the dinner, obviously. So the penny pinching seems to be, I don't know, it's bringing down the fan base at the minute, and the attitude of the likes of Garnacho doesn't help.
I know it's probably something you've been speaking about, but the Amorim comment during the week about the Europa League, saying people look at this competition as the only competition that can save our season, I don't see it like that, nothing can save our season, is just patently untrue. If Manchester United were to win the Europa League this season, that's a decent outcome from here. That is season saved.
Yeah, it is. It just doesn't really change anything in recent past. Like, they've done that, United, and then they still found themselves in a mess shortly afterwards, back in 2017. And the following year, Jose Mourinho has that down as his best season ever, because he finished second to Manchester City 17-18. Remember when they prevented them from winning the league at the Etihad? Mm. And they were 2-0 down at halftime and went back 1-3-2. But it's just because United fans have seen it, and there's only really two trophies that would get them out of this mess, and they're the ones that are totally unattainable, the Premier League and the Champions League. So they've won everything else in the last decade since Ferguson left. So they're a bit tainted by it. And also, if your manager is saying it, then you have to believe it. Like, and Amorim is such a good communicator that he has people believing all his negativity, like, and certainly the players. Like, he has highlights of quotes like, my job is really hard, like really hard, yeah, to the camera, and this is the worst team in United history, it's a really bad situation. And when he was unveiled in his press conference, he said this is going to take a long time. it's going to be a lot of pain. Because he keeps saying, and this is one of the messages that maybe has got lost. He was like, if I do revert to another system, if I get rid of the 3-4-3, if I go back to what you want me to play, 4-2-3-1, we might win a game or two, but we'll still be in this situation next year. And he's a man who's thinking about the medium to long term. And he mentions the long term a lot, which is an interesting philosophy and approach in modern management, that you talk about the long term so openly.
I am right in saying that there's way more chance of United qualifying for the Champions League than there is of the Europa League and Conference League. There's no backdoor into the Europa League, Conference League.
It's a good question.
Like, they can only qualify for the Champions League now, really.
That's a very interesting question, yeah, because I think they're like 14th in the Premier League. So I don't know what the points differentiation in the last European place in the Conference League is between United and that team. But that is an interesting point. And yeah, so
it's their most important competition.
It's hugely important, but I understand from Ruben Amorim's perspective, that why he's playing it down, and he tends to do this. We were even saying this morning with Mark Critchley and Off the Ball Breakfast, like, he did this at Sporting when they beat Manchester City, when they hammered them in the Champions League, and afterwards he was laughing. He said that wasn't the 5-1 victory, you know, right, at all. So he tends to do this.
He bursts a bubble.
Yeah, but he does it in such a positive and charming way that you're kind of on board with him, and it's not a negative aspect. Because, like, can you imagine if United had a really defensive manager in the media now during this period, which most managers, I think, would be in this situation.
Ten Hag was defensive.
He became really defensive. Yeah. Just remember his first season, he was also quite relaxed and composed. But I don't see that character shift ever happening with Ruben Amorim.
I don't know if I would put Amorim as relaxed and composed, though. Mm-hmm. Because I think with the way he has approached the media and the... Like, I think him coming out with those comments about the Europa League and the season not being saved is him saving his own skin, because he knows that the chances of United winning the league is, like, absolutely out there, impossible. Yeah. So it's almost like whenever you do get knocked out, he'll just be like, oh, well, sure, look, I always said this was never going to save our season, so here we are anyway.
No,
it's
that's
a bad season.
But he's been doing that from day one. Like, but literally since the ball was kicked, he was like, this is going to be really tough. He's been saving his skin since he got in the door.
But do you think it is composed as well, like the way he's kind of been calling out all the players publicly and constantly giving off about them publicly? And
that's pointed, though. He does nothing by accident, Ruben Amorim. So that, like, I believe he went into those press conferences fully prepared to say what he was going to. I don't think he gets, like, caught on the hop by a question.
Yeah,
like, I think that criticism of the players was targeted in some ways, maybe to the likes of Rashford, who ultimately left. But I don't know, I just feel like he's a...
But Rashford was already half out the door before Amorim even came in, you know? Like, just with the general attitude of a lot of the players, I don't see what the benefit is of Amorim going and hammering down on the club, on the players, week in, week out. I don't see where it brings any sort of camaraderie or, you know, okay, yeah, he's got rid of some players that he needs to bring in some players. He's obviously not going to be able to do that until the summer, and depending on whatever money that they decide to give him. But also, he has to work with the squad he has for the next couple of months, and you can't just keep saying, like, ah, the season's gone, that's not going to save our season. Yeah, it's
added
bizarre
to me.
I was thinking that, like, 3 weeks ago, Kathleen, exactly the same. I was like, well, he can't keep doing this, and yet he's finding inventive ways to say new things. Like, to answer your question about the composure, in my opinion, it's not composed at all in transcripts, but somehow he does make it palatable the way he says things, because there is a strange upbeat tone
charming to
his delivery. I think it's beyond charming that there. I think you're right, Jane. I think there is a method to everything he's doing, and I don't think he's accidentally falling into the trap of saying this is all rubbish. The one time he had to hold himself back and, I suppose, find himself more accountable was saying this is the worst side in the club's history, because he had to qualify it a bit more. But I suppose it's expectation versus reality. And this weekend is going to be fascinating, because I don't think Arsenal, in their planning for these group of games, ever envisioned this going into the second leg against PSV, that they could really name the strongest team against Manchester United now and have absolutely no doubt about next week. And there's this mad stat that's doing the rounds this week, that every time Arsenal have beaten Manchester United in the Premier League, it's been 1-0.
At Old Trafford.
Every single time at Old Trafford.
Way.
Yeah. So you go back to Mark Overmars, 98, Sylvain Wiltord, 2002.
Did you know this before you put in your exact score?
No, I didn't.
Should have said yes.
I didn't.
The research was done.
You know, because I won the trophy, there's a lot of exact scores. So Emmanuel Adebayor, 2006. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, 2020. Mm. And Leandro Trossard last April. All 0-1.
Was the Overmars the treble year or the season before?
Season before, 97-98. That was when Roy Keane was missing and Overmars.
That is a hell of a statistic. Should have changed my score prediction. Do you want to get your take on Arsenal more deeply in just a moment? But let's bring Lee Phelps from William Hill in. Lee, how are you keeping?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. We're looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, it's kind of, we're at this strange stage of the season now where because the title is gone, the narratives are starting to shift. And I know our charity bet is going to focus around Forest versus City, but just your quick thoughts on Manchester United versus Arsenal on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I've been listening intently to what you guys have been saying and thinking about all those matches which were like, they were the pinnacle of the Premier League at that point, weren't they? Like blockbuster games and all the aggro that went with it. And now, what, 21 points between the two teams? It's crazy. And like, I can't disagree with anything that you guys have said about Manchester United. I mean, it's a strange situation. The manager for me just seems to kind of, like you guys said, he just seems to come out with different things. It's almost like he's playing the media at times, like, I'll just throw something else out this week. You know, almost like the Mourinho style, kind of like just chucking things out there. They're 11-2 to win the Europa League, by the way. Right. Spurs and Lazio are the joint 5-1 favourites. But yeah, as far as this game goes, I think Arsenal may be a touch of value at 3-4. They probably should be shorter, shouldn't they? And I know they've had goal-scoring problems in the league, not in the Champions League, where they just, like, smash 7 in, of course. But I think Arsenal should be shorter than 3-4 to win at Manchester United, not least because of their league position, but also because of what you guys have been saying, the home form. They just don't seem to know what to do at home. And Arsenal are a good side. I know they've got problems, but their injury problems are nothing compared to Manchester United's. I was looking at Odegaard, you know, scored 2 in the week. He seemed to step up his game against the better sides as well when you look back. And he always seems to play better when he comes back off a Champions League midweek as well. He's scored a few goals on his comeback. So I wouldn't mind Odegaard to get in amongst the goals again. He's scored a couple against Manchester United in the past. So that might be a one way in with a bit of extra value. He's 18-5 to score at any time, 8-1 to score first. And if there aren't going to be many goals in it, that might be worth a look. I actually looked at Arsenal to win and Martin Odegaard to have at least one shot on target as just a very small bet builder. And that's 2-1. So Odegaard to have a shot on target and Arsenal to win at 2-1, I thought was decent. But yeah, I mean, I think Arsenal at 3-4 should be going in knacker. Some description on Sunday. That's my view on it.
Okay, that's a good scene set from that game. When it comes to our charity bet then, as I've mentioned, we are going to look at the Nottingham Forest versus Manchester City game on this one. I've just lost it on my screen here.
A draw,
It's a draw, both teams to score, or just a draw?
I think we just went for a draw, because 5 of us in our predictions went for a draw in this game, so...
Well, I did say to Lee beforehand if he wanted to give us any hints and tips since we haven't been all that successful. We were close last week, but we haven't been that successful the last couple of weeks. So let the expert take over.
Well, look, you know, I can see why you're going for it because, you know, there's that kind of, you know, obviously Forest have had a sensational season. I mean, again, like you look at the odds here, Manchester City are odds on. At Forest. And Forest's form has drifted a little bit, hasn't it, recently, to be fair. And you just wonder, is this the point where Man City, and I've said this about 50 times this season, finally go, right, okay, we're going to do it. I mean, the form in the Premier League has been obviously better than it has been in Europe. And if they win this, obviously they suddenly leapfrog Forest. It's a tricky one. I mean, like, you know, scorer markets again, you know, Omar Mamouche, I've liked what I've seen from him. 6-4 to score at any time. Erling Haaland's odds on to score at any time. I think there'll be goals in this. So I think if we are going for the draw, I don't think we're going to have a 0-0. I just can't see a 0-0 in this. So I think if you're going to go for the draw, we have to go for the score draw, which is 7-2 compared to 11-4. So it just seems... I've got no problem with the draw, personally. I think City will win the match, actually, but I'm not so confident that I'm going to rally against the draw, and it wouldn't be a big surprise. So I think 7-2 is a decent price for that. There is one price boost that we've got on this game, which it really caught my eye, and that's Man City to win, Chris Wood and Erling Haaland to have over one shot on target each. That's 12-1, boosted from 9-1. Now, Haaland averages 2 shots on target a game in the Premier League, over 2 shots on target. Chris Wood averages 1, so you've got to do a little bit there, and he's got to have over 1 shot on target to get there. But I think even if you're putting a bet builder together, you could probably just reduce that Chris Wood down to at least 1 shot on target and still get a decent price. But look, I'm not going to try and put you off the draw and both teams to score. I think I can see that.
There's also like this beautiful narrative in that where like Erling Haaland has the great opportunity, like a competition winner, to play against his hero Chris Wood tomorrow afternoon. And I think the opportunity to put them both here, Shane Haaland, I can see dollar signs in your eyes.
Yeah, you did suggest this earlier when we were talking about it in the office.
I said in the office, so though I don't know if you have it in front of you, Lee, but there was, I think there was a William Hill special where it was Chris Wood to score a header in the match. And
yes,
let's be honest,
11-2,
yeah, like it's not bad either. And if he scores, it's probably going to be with his head.
Ah, no, he's unbelievable on the
ground. He is, in fairness, yeah. But like you can just see it in a game like this where maybe a corner comes in and gets his.
He's good in the air as well. Of course, he is.
Yeah, no, that's not a bad shot. I love those specials, those price boosts, because it just gives you. I mean, when you go under the players tab on the match card, you can back all sorts of stuff, like right foot, left foot, inside the 6-yard box, shot on target from outside the penalty area to score. There's a headed shot on target as well. I mean, there's so many different angles you can go in on this. So I think if you find a player, you know, who's, you know, and obviously with all the stats available right now, you can go and find what percentage of headers Chris Wood's had, you know, this season and have a look at it. And sometimes they're the little niches that you find. You think, oh, there's a bit of an angle there. Actually, I quite like that. But yeah, I think this one and the Manchester United Arsenal game are made for the bet builders. We've got a free bet builder bet online this weekend. You just need to go online and opt in to get that. So if you're looking for a bet builder, then check that out on Saturday. And do you know what? Most people in our office are thinking about Cheltenham as well. By the way,
I mean,
huge, huge weekend of football, but all anyone's talking about is Cheltenham. It's like, it's kind of, when we get to this stage, the Friday before Cheltenham, it's like everything's like Cheltenham. But it's going to be great. I mean, even the football next week, obviously, with the Champions League matches and the Europa League as well, straight after the racing. It's a fantastic week. Can't wait for it.
It is always one of the best sports weeks of the year because, as you say, you've got the midweek sport and then you've always got that Super Saturday of Six Nations action as well. Are you heading to the Cotswolds yourself, Lee?
Yeah, I'm there for all 4 days. So it's going to be it's a busy long week. Lucky for me, I'm off the drink until April.
Right.
So
lucky for you, indeed.
So I should be able to survive the 4 days at least. But yeah, we get there on Monday. We've got Sir AP McCoy, and we've got Barry Geraghty as two of our racing ambassadors, Jane Mangan as well. So we'll be doing lots of content with them all week. So if you're into your racing as well, make sure you check out all the tips from the guys each day ahead of the racing. Should be great. We've got again like the football as well. We've got if you check out online, you'll find there's a free bet to be had for the first day of Cheltenham as well. So you need to opt in for that, and then it becomes available on Sunday to use from Sunday onwards. So it should be a cracker. It should be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we're settling on both teams to score a draw tomorrow. So just a reminder what that price is, Lee?
7-2.
Very good. Lee Phelps of William Hill, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Just to circle back to the top game of our billing, just a quick word on Arsenal. Anybody having their view of their significant trophy winning capabilities this season change about the fact that they scored 7 goals in the Netherlands, or no? I'm 100% sure that they will get knocked out in the Champions League quarterfinal, no matter which Madrid team comes through, and this week doesn't change that.
There's no argument in your head you can make for Arsenal in the quarterfinal, no?
No, they'll get bullied off that park, right, by whoever that is.
100%. Like, the chasm of quality during the week between Arsenal and PSV was just so big.
Yeah.
So big. And it's been a while since I've seen them play a team in that way where they're that dominant and also scoring that many goals considering their issues up front over the last couple of months. So, I'm in the same page as Owen.
They'll get shithoused completely and it will seem unfair and it will probably, they'll only get knocked out by one goal or something along those lines. It'll seem like Bayern Munich last year. But unless like Odegaard's resurgent form is actually real, but I suspect it was kind of like playing on beginner level on FIFA last Tuesday.
I think they messed up by not beating Bayern last year. Bayern, that was their chance.
Yeah.
They should have beaten that Bayern team. I agree with you. I don't think whoever they get in the next round, I think they will just be totally bullied off the pitch. I don't think it'll be a situation where they look as confident and in control as they did at stages of last year when they were playing Bayern, or where they looked like they could actually take the game. I think it will be a proper drubbing. Not a 7-1 drubbing, but a confident.
Do you think Arsenal will get drubbed in the quarterfinal?
I think it'll be like a confident win for whoever it is.
Wow.
I think it'll be like a confident 3-1.
Now I feel like the need to defend Arsenal. I'll be like, actually, no.
That PSV game was freakish in nature.
It was crazy.
Like,
yeah.
It was 0-0 after a quarter of an hour and PSV hit the bar.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the XG for Arsenal was, but it seemed to convert most chances they created.
It was 3, I think.
All right, was it? Okay. Right. Well, it was impressive enough. So they...
they still outperformed it by 4.
It just goes to show how elite these footballers are when they play with confidence, because at the end, Martin Odegaard was Ronaldinho 2004-06, where he was just taking the piss on the pitch, just having a great time for himself. Like the outside the right footed pass to put Ricardo Calafiore through. And I was like, whatever about putting Mikel Moreno up front, right? And I know he scored. It was a very kind of Astro-like goal, megzing the opposition player. But like, Calafiore is an unbelievable finisher. And actually has played up front more recently than Marino did in their amateur careers. So like his finish there against Manchester City when he just joined the club, that curler. But the way he finished that goal against PSV was right foot into the far corner. It's a hell of a player. Like if you're looking for a striker, Jair, you have it right there.
Sorry, I was wrong. Their XG was 2.35. Wow. PSG had a higher XG against Liverpool the following night with 2.58, scoring 7 goals fewer.
Jeez.
Football, eh? Let's move on.
You swear XG just meant absolutely nothing.
Manchester City versus Nottingham Forest. Again, we're trying to, we've got to start shifting the storylines of the season. So title race is done. But Nottingham Forest in third place on 48 points. Aston Villa in 10th place on 42 points. 6 points separating third and 10th. Could we be looking at an all-time great Champions League race?
Owen and I were debating before you guys came into the room whether this was actually the game of the weekend in terms of what's on the line.
I think it is.
There's nothing happening in United Arsenal. Yeah, this is undoubtedly it. Look how tight that is. Champions League places are insane.
I think that's why.
But it's 12:30 on a Saturday as well.
It takes away from it a little bit, doesn't it?
You want a nice 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock kickoff for that sort of game.
Or a Sunday game. Like, it's. I've gone for a 1-1 here because I feel like it's the type of game neither team wants to really lose. Like, because there's nothing really separating them. You don't want to mess up at this stage of the season. You don't want to give confidence to the team right behind you or right ahead of you, in this case, in the league table. So I just feel like neither team is going to really risk a hell of a lot. City obviously have they're fighting on a number of fronts, including the Champions League. I don't know. I'd love to see the scientific stats behind the early kickoffs and how much they benefit the home team. I presume they do. There's not a hell of a lot of difference between Nottingham and Manchester, but that could be an argument in favour of Nottingham Forest getting something out of this game. And they weren't overly, positive in any sense against Plymouth Argyle in the FA Cup, Man City either. Forest have kind of scraped through a couple of FA Cup ties. They don't have a great a record against Manchester City, but that won't matter a jot heading into this game. I just think it's one of those games where, neither team will want to lose, and that's why I've gone for the draw.
We should say that only one of our panel has gone for a win for Nottingham Forest, and that is Nathan Murphy. So I'm just conscious, like, are we still in the Manchester City muscle memory habit here? Like, whenever Nottingham Forest have encountered their blip that we had been expecting all season, they tend to surprise us with a win. Now, this is their worst blip. They haven't gone three games... Well, sorry, they've only gone three games without a win once previously in the season, but they certainly haven't had a three-game run with as few points as they had in the last three games, which is just 1 point, which is the nil-all draw with Arsenal. So this is their worst three-game run of the season. So there is definitely method to the rest of our predictions, but Nathan is saying no. Whenever we doubt Nottingham Forest, they prove us wrong.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I just think they're gonna fade now. I think that blip was much earlier in the season. They had time to get over it, and I think they're. Maybe got a bit spooked after the 7-0 drubbing of Brighton on the 1st of February, which weirdly followed a 5-0 hammering at the hands of Bournemouth. So they destroyed Brighton in a lunchtime game on a Saturday. And since then, they've been very unconvincing. They've won a couple of penalty shootouts in the FA Cup, but other than that, they drew at Arsenal, of course, and then they lost a couple of other games, 2 in a row in the Fulham and Newcastle. So I think they're like, Jesus Christ, we're actually third. We actually do something here. And then when you start thinking about it, it's the worst thing ever. If they level out to even a Europa Conference League place, it would be a hell of a success season. But it's a bit like Arsenal the last couple of seasons, when they actually have had a really good campaign overall, but the way that Mikel Arteta front loaded their success with three quarters of the season was great, the last quarter was poor. It'll feel like Forest underperformed somehow weirdly. I think Man City are out of the Champions League, they're out of the Premier League title race, they have the FA Cup to look forward to, and they have Premier League. And he can start planning for the future already. He has a few new signings in January. It's the bones of the new squad, what's going to look like next season. And I fully believe that City are going to win this game. I have them 3-1.
Top five this season?
What are my top five?
Yeah.
So it'll be top two is sewn up, I think, in Liverpool and Arsenal. Then I think City will get third, because at the moment it's Forest third, City are a point behind.
Yeah.
Then Chelsea, I think, will come in the rear. They're going to go, I think they're going to finish the season nice. And what does that leave? With one place below.
Newcastle are on 44.
Newcastle
Forest are on 48 at the moment. Bournemouth are on 43. Right. So are Brighton on 43.
I'd have Newcastle in fifth.
So Forest missed out in Champions League?
I think Forest. I'd be shocked. Shocked if Forest got Champions League.
I'd probably have Chelsea missing out potentially. Liverpool first, Arsenal second, City third. Forest, I think, can sneak fourth. And I wouldn't be at all surprised even if Newcastle finished ahead of Chelsea in fifth. I know Newcastle are a couple of points behind Chelsea at the minute, but I don't know. I just think the tail end of the season, maybe. Not that Chelsea will put much into the Europa Conference League run, but one eye will kind of move towards that, towards the tail end of the season, getting a bit of silverware. But it's going to be close. Like that, I hadn't realised there was such a narrow gap between third and tenth. That is insane. But yeah, with what, 11 games to play, we could have the best ever race for top four.
Kathleen, who's your Champions League teams?
Liverpool, Arsenal. See, I want to say City for third, but I do also think part of that is muscle memory. Mm. I don't know, have they actually shown me enough over the last couple of weeks that they are going to kick on and do something? In some ways, I think, you know, you mentioned the new signings and the bones of the new team. Part of me thinks that Guardiola is going to take that time now that they are essentially out of the title race to like keep that Champions League spot. But I don't know if they're going to like kick on enough. Liverpool, Arsenal, City. I'm going to give it to Forest. I'm going to give Forest an opportunity to get the Champions League place. I don't know if they're going to fall off completely.
And then who's your fifth Champions League team?
Chelsea.
Chelsea are going to make it. Yeah, I think I'm signing a column on that. I think Forest are going to drop out of the top five. Again, just big clubs. Big clubs will do big things between now and the end of the season. Chelsea versus Leicester City. Let's have a look at what we're predicting for this week. I presume it might be leaning towards the home team, given Leicester City are not good at football.
Why do we have this game?
well, because it's live
commentary and off the ball and news talk.
Oh, tune into this competitive
Sunday
game. Please do.
Yeah. One of two live games. You know, yeah, Arsenal or Man United, Arsenal the other one. This is a 2 o'clock kickoff on Sunday.
Shane, you're the one giving Leicester City a pretty good chance relative to a lot of people. Actually, does Jarre's going for a 2-1 win. There's some big scorelines up there. Colm, you're going for a 5-1 Chelsea when you think they're really back in business. Nathan going for a 4-1 win. You're liking the look of Chelsea, even though Palmer played wheeled out against Copenhagen.
Well, I think he needs goals, isn't he? So I don't want to bring him back into it. But to have an interesting tactical shift slightly up front is that Parma's pinched in the middle more as the number nine, false nine, and Cuckoo's on the left. And Neto is playing as a 10, weirdly, and they're using their wing-backs to go further forward. So I don't know why they switched that. But Enzo Maresca is a bit like Ruben Amorim, right? He talked his side out of it way too prematurely, in my opinion. This Premier League title was open to an extent about 3 months ago, and that's when Chelsea were flying it. Up until I think Stephen's day, they started going a bit negative. And Maresca, every opportunity he could get, said, "We're not ready for this. There's no way we're ready for this title." And Cole Palmer reflected those words as a star player. And I think they eventually believed what they said. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. And they dropped off massively. And I don't think they needed to drop off. I think they have a very good squad. I think they could have comfortably got Champions League football rather than scrambling for it at the end.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. Or else he maybe looked under the bonnet and knew what was about to come.
Look, maybe the reality is exactly that. And they were overperforming. But even if they were, my point would be like, you know, make them believe, like, outperform yourself. You know, there is an ultimate example of it 9 years ago in the Premier League. It can be done.
They won 4-0 against Southampton last time in the Premier League, so you'd expect there to be no problems. Does anybody have anything else to say on Chelsea versus Leicester?
Like I went for 2-0, but I just think they had the ability, of course, to wreck some players against Copenhagen, and their home record, Stamford Bridge. I think they haven't lost in 18 games at Stamford Bridge.
Is that right?
Yeah, apparently. Christ. So it's, the home record is really good. The away form not so great, but just as one of those games where You kind of feel a little bit sorry for Van Nistelrooy at this point. Speaking of XG, they have the lowest XG Leicester City in the league. Only Liverpool have higher than Chelsea. So you could be right with your goals galore for Chelsea in this game for sure. But there is an element of right man, wrong time or something about the Van Nistelrooy to Leicester thing. Like he obviously showed really
Really, right, man?
I think he showed... per rude.
That was rude.
I think what I mean by right man is he has the capabilities
by,
of...
By right man, I meant wrong man.
Yeah, of course. We're talking in opposites today. What I meant was he certainly has the capacity and potential to be a really good manager of Van Nistelrooy. He's shown signs, even in the short time he was interim coach at United with the
two games were against Leicester.
That's true, yeah, ironically. But I just think it was a bit early in his managerial tenure to be taking over a team like Leicester where, like... The pressure is almighty to stay up, and they just didn't have the squad to really compete.
The last time Leicester played Chelsea, they sacked their manager, Leicester.
Mm.
Right.
Writing's on the wall.
Steve Cooper went out last time. Now, the only caveat, Owen, right, only sign of hope here is the possibility that there is a European hangover from Chelsea, right? Because do you remember the random game when Leicester went to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and won?
Oh, yeah.
That was after Thursday night football for Spurs. And Chelsea have had to go to Denmark.
That's Spurs, though.
And they're just back. And Leicester have had a bit of time. That's the only hope that they have.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair. That is fair enough. Is there a case to be made that Cole Palmer is actually going to go down as a disappointing season? Unless he has an uptick in goals. Like, Brian Mbeumo has more goals than him. Excellent player, but I definitely had expectations of Palmer to be in that level just below Salah and Haaland, basically the third best player in the league.
Well, I think it's a really good question because it goes back to my theory of if you front load your season with success, but the second half of the season is disappointing, you were seen as having a poor season, generally speaking.
Whereas the opposite
would
be good.
If Palmer was underperforming up until Christmas, we'd be like, what's the story with this guy? And between January and now, he was flying it. You'd be like, this.
He
if it wasn't for this guy,
the, like,
it'd be unbelievable.
Second highest passing and shooting rate in the league.
Yeah.
And he's also got a whole pile of assists, I'd assume, on top of that. Mm. Well, he's got six of them.
But I would say he has a propensity to possibly go missing in the bigger games or maybe just marked out of it. Like, I don't know which it is.
Saka has four more assists than him and he's been missing for half the season.
Yeah, there is...
And then you look at the goal scoring and he's in sixth. So it's Mbeumo, Wood, Isak, Haaland, Salah ahead of him. And he's just one goal ahead of Cunha and Wissa.
See, I wonder, is he being analysed as a statistical player? As in, you talk about Palmer with goals and assists, but you don't talk about his game.
Mm. That's certainly what I'm doing here, to be fair. Yeah, you think there's way more to it than the
I don't
numbers.
Know. I'm just like, can we all explain what Cole Palmer's game is? What is it?
Yeah, it's a bit of everything. But I would also say to both of those points, like, when a player of Cole Palmer's ability has a bit of a lull in the middle of the season, it actually makes me think, well, something big is coming. And if he manages to push Chelsea to a top four finish and a trophy in the Europa Conference League, it's a really good season for Chelsea. He could still have a massive 8 weeks ahead,
yes,
at this stage, you know, and the lull in that, we might look back in the lull in the season and his dip in form maybe as necessary for that final push in the last 6-8 weeks. I don't know what, like, there's not, I know these professional players, you know, with strength and conditioning nowadays, you're expected to be on top form throughout the entire season, but that's just not possible biologically speaking. So maybe he'll kick on now and help Chelsea have a really, really decent season if they get top four and a European trophy as well.
Yeah, he's got three Premier League goals since the middle of December. So, look, your point, maybe part of the reason why you play him against Copenhagen is just trying to get him back into form. And I realise that having this conversation about Cole Palmer right before they play Leicester City at home is pretty idiotic on my part. So I'm aware of the dangers. Let's have a look at the FA Cup this weekend, which is Arsenal women versus Liverpool. Kathleen, oh wow, this is all Arsenal. That's, to be fair, not a massive surprise. Shane is going for an absolute corker here. 4-3 scoreline to Arsenal.
Is that just after last weekend
in
the WSL?
Yeah.
Same scoreline.
Yeah, I was like, you know what?
That's what always happens.
Yeah, there's often like we always throw in the 1-0s and the 2-1s, and then you see a 4-3 and you're like, Jesus. Yeah, I should have gone for that. You know, we should have gone for whatever it ultimately turns out as. I'm just expecting a bang of goal. And it was it was 1-0 in the reverse
fixture. Somewhere. I'm like, I'm going to put that here. Yeah. Like a jigsaw. Yeah.
Just a random game that's going to be
4-3. When you put that in yesterday, Emma Carroll was like, where does he think Liverpool are getting three goals from?
I know. Look, it's tough to make the argument for a 7-goal thriller. I understand that. But I don't know. Liverpool scored 5 at West Ham. Quite recently, didn't they?
They scraped by Crystal Palace 1-0 at the weekend.
Yeah. So, like, look, it's tough to make the argument, but I do think there's got a few goals in this game, and also when it's the cup as well, you know, it tends to throw up the odd mad result, and teams kind of play with a free abandonment when it comes to the cup as well, so maybe that leads to goals. It's all about getting through. It doesn't really matter about conceding two or three goals as long as you score four yourself.
Yeah.
So that's my logic in terms of a seven-goal thriller in the cup.
You were saying, Kathleen, that talk is not really surrounding events in the cup at all this weekend. Everybody's worried about relegation or lack thereof in the WSL.
Yeah, I think these games are definitely being completely overshadowed. So the Women's Professional Leagues Limited, which is such an easy thing to say, is the organisation that basically took over the running of the Women's Super League and the championship from the FA from the start of this season. They've been relatively successful in that they've negotiated like a 5-year contract with Sky Sports. There's a bit more money coming into the league, but they held a meeting last Friday with all the teams from the WSL and the championship and put a proposal to them that they would scrap relegation from the WSL for the next 4 seasons, so until 2030-31 season. And instead have a closed league where you could still be, not an entirely closed league, you could still be promoted into the league, you just couldn't drop out, so it would increase the league to 16 teams rather than 12 as it currently is. Now, I think everyone for a long time has been calling for the league to expand, but there's been massive backlash from fans at the idea of not having any relegation, which I would be on the side of as well. We did an episode about it on Koi Gig this week. You know, we've had Jilly Flaherty on the show before and we've talked about it, and she would be of the same thinking as myself and a lot of other people of 2 up, 1 down for a couple of seasons rather than closing the league completely, because I don't think it's going to bring the attraction that the league or the new company that's taken over the league think it is. You know, are you going to watch Crystal Palace versus Aston Villa when you know there's no jeopardy at stake? Like, the relegation race this year is actually really interesting because Aston Villa have just fallen off a bit of a cliff over the last few weeks. Leicester are down there. Crystal Palace, the ones who got brought up, are the most likely to go down. But especially when you have a situation where Chelsea have won the last 5 titles in a row, you're not really looking at the title race in the same way. It's generally the relegation race that has been one of the most interesting talking points. Now, they have Nikki Doucette, who's the new head of it all. She has said that the backlash hasn't put them off the idea, but that there seemed to be almost a bit of certainty that there was a vote that was going to come at the end of the season. That now is a bit more airy-fairy from her side, saying, you know, we're still looking at what we're going to do. We're still contemplating this. Maybe it won't be a vote at the end of the season. Kelly Simmons, who used to be the head of the FA and ran the championship in the WSL for years, had a big opinion piece in The Guardian during the week. She's a columnist with them now, saying all the reasons why she thought it was a terrible idea. And the FA have also come out and said that they still have a part ownership in the league and they have this thing called a golden veto, and that if they do go ahead with closing the league and getting rid of the relegation, that they will most more than likely use it unless there is a bit more clarity over what the process is going to be. To get rid of relegation, I think just on a pure vote, you need 8 teams from both leagues to vote for it. So it is quite a high percentage of both leagues that you need to agree with it. And I think there's also been a massive amount of anger over just the lack of clarity on the fan side. You know, this is all coming through leaks from clubs, from within these meetings, rather than Nikki Doucette just standing up and being like, look, these are the options we put on the table. This is what we're thinking. This is why we're thinking it. She did hold a briefing yesterday, the day before, and kind of ran through bits. But at that stage, the damage had been done on a fan side of things. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting couple of weeks to see if they do go ahead with it. I mean, there are definitely going to be teams in the WSL who look at that and be like, great.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, the names of the teams that you mentioned earlier on, like Leicester, Villa, and Palace, it's Birmingham City who are top of the or the championship table at the moment.
Like, I think bringing in a playoff is a great idea to the championship, because the championship title race and whoever gets promoted the last couple of years has been absolutely brilliant, and there's been like a point difference in it. I think, you know, whoever comes top, get them promoted, and then playoff for the 3 or 4 teams below it. That would be class.
Yeah.
It'll bring so much excitement rather than getting rid of relegation completely. And I also think there's a massive assumption on the side of the company that are running all this that they have put forward this thing that if we do this, like clubs will want to invest in their team more because they'll know they're definitely there for the next 4 years. And I'm like, do you know some of the clubs that these teams are associated with? Like, that is by no means a certainty. You look at what's going on with Liverpool, the tiny squad. You look at what's going on with United. You know, they're putting a lot of the onus back on the clubs. And I think unless they say, right, if you have to spend XYZ amount on your grassroots, on your academy, on your first team to actually maintain your place, I think they need to put those sort of caveats in rather than saying you get a free pass for the next 4 years.
Right. It'd be very interesting to see how that plays out. What's the ideal number of teams in the top tier?
I mean, 16 would be good if they could get it. And I know they are going to say, like, Newcastle only have a women's team of the last couple of years. Norwich are doing really good stuff with their women's team, and they're the division below the Championship again. So they are reaching out to clubs who would be, like, big Premier League, big Championship clubs, and saying to them, you know, what can you do? What can you invest so that you might actually be in the running for this sort of promotion, which is positive. But again, I think they're putting too much faith in clubs that they will invest.
Right, we're all going for Arsenal when it comes to on the pitch this weekend. It's a 2:30 kickoff on Sunday between Arsenal and Liverpool in the Women's FA Cup. You've been listening to Kathleen McNamee, Colin Buick and Shane Hannan on this week's Who You Got. Folks, thank you very much. We'll chat to you this time next week.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.